Today I'm going to talk about a problem that's relatively new. We've been working on it for a relatively short time, so it sort of raises, in my opinion, more questions than it answers. It's a problem that involves exploiting the wireless broadcast medium to reduce delays in wireless sensor networks. So, as I'm sure all of you know, there is a lot of hype around sensor networks. Sensor networks are expected to have, you know, potentially ubiquitous deployment, and the person who will probably vehemently object to this is Ravi Mazumdar. And I sort of agree with him that the jury is still out on them. Nonetheless, there are many, many potential applications of this technology which could have ramifications in terms of providing alarms to prevent or to contain natural disasters, for surveillance systems, safety and transportation systems. Of course, habitat and environmental monitoring is certainly a very, very major application, and also the battlefield environment. In many of these applications, it turns out that energy efficiency is an important challenge because these sensor nodes are not tethered and they rely on embedded battery power. Moreover, they are deployed often in places where it's quite costly to keep changing their batteries. And therefore, there has been a substantial body of work which has been focused on development of smart energy management techniques to extend the lifetime and to sort of improve the throughput performance. And here is a quick, probably non-comprehensive list of some of the different approaches to saving energy and prolonging network lifetime in sensor networks. You know, starting from power control, you only transmit at power levels that you need, you schedule links appropriately to avoid contention, you route in ways that are energy efficient, you perform congestion control in case when you have flash events taking place so that you don't have too many retransmissions, you have data aggregation where you aggregate the information, you fuse the data, and therefore you transmit the same amount of total information perhaps, or some compressed version of it, but you transmit much less actual data. And finally, the approach that we are going to talk about today is perhaps the simplest of all of these approaches, which is sleep-wake scheduling, which all it does is it turns the radio off completely. Okay? And the reason for that is that keeping the radio on, even in receive mode, consumes an enormous amount of energy. Okay? So this is probably among all of the fancy techniques that people talk about using to save energy, turning the radio off turns out to be the most efficient. Okay. So of course, what happens when you turn the radio off? Well, you have delays. Okay, and one of the things that we want to do is we want to figure out how to turn these radios off such that the delay is not terribly excessive. So sleep-wake scheduling itself is a rich area. There have been many different works. Primarily, I would say there have been two categorizations of works. One is in synchronized sleep-wake scheduling protocols, where each node knows exactly when its neighboring nodes will wake up, and it exchanges some synchronization messages with the other nodes, and then you can actually limit the delay pretty well. However, you know, there is a debate in the community as to whether having a sensor network synchronized is efficient from the point of view of energy, because there is obviously a great deal of message exchange that takes place which consumes a considerable amount of energy. So there is, you know, another sort of religious faction which talks about asynchronous sleep protocols, where each node wakes up independently of the other nodes, but in this case, The North can only estimate when the neighbors will wake up, and you can have fairly large delays than in the synchronized case. So our focus here will be on the second class of sleep-wake scheduling protocols. And what we are planning on doing is on reducing the delay using this technique called Anycast. So if we think of traditional sleep-wake scheduling, a sending node waits for a designated next hop forwarder to wake up. While in Anycast sleep-wake scheduling, the sending node really exploits the wireless broadcast mechanism because it's already kind of, sending beacons, and then it transmits to the first node among a set of candidate forwarders that wake up. So here is a simple example that shows the potential of the improvement in delays using Anycast. Okay. So let's assume that each sensor node wakes up independently according to a Poisson process with rate lambda. And without Anycast, obviously the expected time until the next node wakes up is 1 over lambda. So your total delay, if you had k hops, would be k over lambda. Now, if you had little n forwarding nodes, okay, then the expected delay to the next hop now becomes 1 over n lambda, right? And therefore, the total delay is reduced by a factor of little n. And that's essentially the essence of Anycast. Yeah. So I hope that this example has sort of convinced you that you can use this wireless broadcast medium to significantly reduce the end-to-end delay. However, there are some critical challenges. For one, if you don't have a layered structure of nodes, selecting the set of candidate forwarders, which we will call the forwarding set, becomes a challenging issue, okay? Because these forwarding sets, in a sense, determine the various routing paths, and if you don't select a forwarder in an intelligent way, or you end up selecting a wrong forwarder, well, the delay from your node to the sync could be quite large than, say, if it would be through another path in the network. The other point is, when you make these decisions locally, how do you guarantee that each forwarding set, in fact, reduces the delay even over the routing case? Okay? Because you may end up transmitting packets in a direction from which it transmits to another forwarder and it generates some kind of a loop. Okay. So these are some of the issues that one has to deal with when developing such Anycasting techniques. So typical Anycasting schemes in the literature do take into account the interactions between the choice of the forwarding sets and the routing paths. Okay. Many of them mainly focus on MAC layer protocols and have a separate kind of routing algorithm that runs on it, or they kind of based it on some geographical information, which is that you essentially choose a forwarding node among all of the nodes that are geographically closer to the destination, something like that. Moreover, the existing algorithms that, at least that we've seen, do not consider controlling these wake-up rates in the sleep-wake schedules. So here is sort of the contribution of our preliminary work, which is to formulate and solve the joint control problem of how to optimally choose this set of forwarders. We call them the forwarding set. And also the priorities among the neighboring nodes in the forwarding set. That is, if two nodes are wake up at the same time, which one do you choose? And then finally, the wake-up rates in the sleep-wake scheduling, and how do you optimally choose all of this to maximize the network lifetime? So here is the model. We have a sensor network that consists of N sensor nodes, and each node detects an event and reports this information to the sync in some multi-hop fashion. Now, there are two critical assumptions that we make. You can argue whether they are realistic or not, and we'll actually talk about that in some of these open issues. The first one is that in the class of networks that we are looking at, events occur rarely. Collision and contention of events is typically not an issue or easily resolvable, okay, through retransmission. The other thing that we assume is that sleep-wake scheduling consumes most of the energy. That is, the duty cycle is very, very small. Okay, so therefore, for many, many applications, you know, just the network to kind of remain awake, okay, periodically is consuming the most amount of energy. The actual transmission takes place very, very rarely. So that's the model that we have. And let's say that we have a sending node, I, that needs to transmit some information, either its own information or information that's relayed to it. Then what it does is it sends out a sequence of beacon signals followed by an ID until a node J in its forwarding set wakes up. Node J wakes up and hears this beacon, sends back an acknowledgement if it is part of this forwarding set, and the acknowledgement is received and the packet is transmitted to that node, and now that node becomes the new sending. So that's how the process is developed. So here is sort of the summary of the sleep-wake operation. I think I've gone through most of them, except that if that node that wakes up is not in the forwarding set in the sender and receives a signal, it goes back to sleep. And when the sender receives an acknowledgement, if there are multiple nodes that receive that acknowledgement, the sender picks the highest priority node as a forwarder during this time period T sub R. So for this system model, we have three control variables. The first one is the forwarding set script FI. This is the set of eligible next hop nodes of transmitter node I, and a corresponding global forwarding set, which is denoted by this boldface A, which is the collection of all forwarding sets, of the forwarding sets of all the nodes. And we also define the priority between neighboring nodes, Bij, to be the priority of node J for sending node I. Okay? So if B1J is greater than B2J, okay, then, did I say that right? Priority of node J, no, so if BI1 is greater than BI2, and if both these nodes wake up at the same time, you would transmit the information to node 1. Okay, and then of course there is this global priority set that's denoted by this cap B. So let's assume that you have a sending node I. Node wakes up and receives a packet. If another node wakes up not in the forwarding set, it goes to sleep. And if both 1 and 2 wake up and send back acknowledgments to node I, then the sending node, in fact, sends a transmission to node 1 because its priority is higher than node 2. So this global forwarding set and the global priority set in fact characterize all of the routing paths and the probability that a packet traverses each routing path.
One question.
Yeah.
Both 1 and 2 will still get the packet, right?
Yes, but it's not destined for 2. That's the point. Yeah, 2 will basically ignore it. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, all of them will get the packet, right, in that neighborhood. Okay, the final control variable are the wake-up rates, lambda j. So in this case, each node j, we are going to assume, wakes up according to a Poisson process with rate lambda. And that's the wake-up process that I'm going to talk about in this talk. This can actually be generalized, and we'll talk about that later. So, of course, if this wake-up rate, lambda j, increases, then the expected one-hop delay decreases, but then the power consumption increases. So this lambda j is quite critical in choosing it well. Okay. Then, because of the memory-less process, property of the Poisson process, the optimal forwarding set is the same regardless of which beacon signal is actually received. So it's regardless of the sequence number of the beacon signal. So an equivalent control variable to the rates is the awake probability. So the awake probability PJ is the probability that for a given beacon ID signal, a neighboring node wakes up and hears that signal. Okay. So if the receiving node has to hear beacon signal H, then it needs to wake up in this interval. Okay, because it stays on for this period of time, which is the time of the ID plus this interval between the beacon nodes. So what we're going to do is, since there is an equivalent characterization from the rates to these probabilities, which is trivial, comes from the Poisson process, we are going to control the awake probabilities instead of the rates. And the global awake probability set, the vector is defined to be this P vector. So let's talk a little bit about the expected delay. D sub I of A, B, and P is defined to be the expected end-to-end delay of node I given this global forwarding set A, the global priority B, and this awake probability vector P. And now what we are going to assume to kind of get an idea of how the lifetime is defined, that each time a node wakes up, it consumes UI units of energy. Fixed. So this tells you that the rate of waking up is important, but you know the wake-up duration is essentially fixed, okay? Except when an event occurs, which happens rarely, okay? So typically, you know, the main contributor to this lifetime is the number of wake-ups that take place, because there is some energy to be consumed when you move a node from being asleep to waking up. So the lifetime of each sensor node I is defined to be QI, which is the remaining energy at node I, divided by the energy that is consumed per unit time. And we define the network lifetime as the shortest lifetime among all of the nodes. It basically corresponds to the first node to die. So here is the lifetime maximization problem that we are interested in solving. We would like to control the global forwarding set A, the global priority set B, and the awake probability P to maximize the network lifetime subject to a bound on the expected end-to-end delay. So if you look at this, this problem on the face of it turns out to be quite a complex problem because, for one, this forwarding set A and B are discrete control variables. It's non-convex because the delay is not convex in this P vector. And there is this coupling between these three control variables. And of course, we want to solve it in a way in which the solution must be simple and distributed. So here is our approach to solve this problem. The approach can be sort of broken up into three steps. In the first step, we call this the local solution. We, for each particular node, we find the optimal forwarding set and priority, given that that node knows what its delays are to the destination. Okay, so given that, we do that. In the second step, we relax that assumption and find the optimal forwarding set and priority of all the nodes to maximize the end-to-end delay given this probability vector P. And the third step, we find that probability vector P, or we basically find the optimal wake-up rate. And it turns out that this allows us to actually get the overall optimal solution. So, whoops, that's bizarre. Okay, so let's look at step one, which is the sub-problem of the lifetime maximization problem. Here we want to find the optimal forwarding set and priority assignment of a given sender I to to minimize its delay under two hypotheses, two very restrictive hypotheses right now. Okay, the first one is that this global awake probability vector is given. Okay? And the delays of these neighboring nodes are also given. Okay? So these two things are given. And in that case, the optimal priority assignment, okay, is quite straightforward, because if these nodes are in sort of increasing order of their delays, then all you want to choose is you want to make sure that, you know, if two nodes wake up, you want to choose the guy which has the lower delay. Okay. So that part is quite straightforward. But finding, in fact, the optimal forwarding set, the set that minimizes the delay, is more difficult, because this optimal forwarding set depends both on the delay of the neighboring nodes and the rate at which these nodes wake up. Okay? So in fact, if we define this function f, the delay function, which is the expected delay from sender I, when you have pi I being the set of the fixed delays of the neighboring nodes, and fi being the forwarding set, then you can write this delay function with a very simple equation like that, and the optimal forwarding set turns out to be the smallest forwarding set fi that minimizes this delay function. However, if we assume that there are k neighbors, it means there are 2 to the power k possible forwarding sets. And of course, the exhaustive search for something like this has complexity order 2 to the k. Okay. So how do we get around it? Well, we show that, in fact, the optimal forwarding set has the following necessary condition, which is that all nodes that are inside this optimal forwarding set have a delay which is less than a certain threshold. And all nodes that are outside this forwarding set has a delay which is greater than a certain threshold. Okay? So let's assume that nodes are, again, arranged in increasing order. Then if this is the threshold, then the blue nodes correspond to nodes that are in the optimal forwarding set, and the red nodes correspond to nodes that are outside of the forwarding set. So now the optimal forwarding set is of the form 1, 2, 3, you know, and then it stops at some point. So the complexity of finding it is order k. I should say that there could actually potentially, that is, we haven't proven that this is sufficient, there could be non-optimal forwarding sets that satisfy proposition 3 as well, but that doesn't matter, because what you do is you basically just choose the minimum forwarding set that satisfies you, right? So you run an algorithm that initially chooses one node, okay, and sets this k value to be 2. If d2 is greater than this threshold, then you immediately stop running the algorithm, you find the optimal. Otherwise, you increase and so on, which is why the algorithm has order complex. So, in fact, in practice, if you have k neighbors and k is quite large, like 20 or so, in practice, the stopping condition is much smaller than k, right? Something like 4 or 5, which will be in your forwarding set. So the number of computations is quite a bit smaller. The other remark is that the algorithm, this local op, is time invariant. And, of course, a third remark is that, look, we've still not solved the problem. We've only solved the problem when the delays of the neighboring nodes are fixed. Right. So now let's look at what happens when you go to step 2 of the problem, which is you want to find the global forwarding set A and priority assignment B that minimizes the actual end-to-end delay. Now, when the global awake probability is given, but your fixed delay assumption that you required for the local solution is now relaxed. So the question is, can we somehow use this local solution that we have developed and develop a traditional sort of Bellman-Ford or Dijkstra type of algorithm to solve the problem? So let's think about that a little bit. If we think of the traditional Bellman-Ford distributed algorithm, the delay turns out to be the sum of the link costs along the routing path, right? So if there is a node, it receives delay values for neighboring nodes, sends it to the next hop neighbor, and the other node does the same thing, transmits to the sink. However, in the problem we are looking at, the delay actually is quite a complex animal, right? It's a complex mixture of these link costs along the possible routing paths, right? So, for example, for a given delay, the total link costs, or the delay function now, that are associated with the node could be quite different depending on the choice of which forwarding set you use. And also, the delay is not in the form of a simple summation. So the question is, can you still develop a Bellman-Ford algorithm? And it turns out the answer is, you can still develop an algorithm that has sort of this localized property of the Bellman-Ford algorithm, okay, and converges to the optimal value. And this algorithm I'm outlined here, which is that if you look at iteration 0, each node sets its delay to be infinity, then the sink sets its delay to be 0, and then you move to the next iteration. Okay. In this case, if you were at, say, let's say iteration H, the node collects the delays from the neighbors, okay, and then the node assigns priorities according to the delays, and then runs this local algorithm to find the optimal forwarding set, and then finally you can show that this algorithm converges. So actually, this delay optimal algorithm does very much have this flavor of this Bellman-Ford algorithm, in that it works from the sink to all of the nodes. So, you know, first the delays of these nodes are computed, then the delays of the previous, and so on, until all of them are computed. Okay? So the proof of convergence, it turns out, is actually quite involved. So let's think of some of the properties of the global solution. So A star of P, we define that to be the global forwarding set that's obtained from the delay optimal algorithm, and B star of P is the global priority from the optimal algorithm. And in this case, this algorithm has the following, what I think are nice properties. The first thing is it's distributed. Second thing, it converges within n iterations. The forwarding set does not produce any loops, okay? And for a given awake probability vector P, okay, this couplet of the optimal forwarding set given by the delay optimal algorithm and the optimal priority set, in fact, are the sets that minimize the end-to-end delay. Okay? So what this means is that now if we look at the original optimization problem, rather than finding all the various optimal forwarding sets, all we do is we need to check whether for all nodes I, the delay at these optimal values of A star and B star is less than the constraint. So what this means is essentially we've taken a problem that had three control variables and without a loss of optimality mapped it to a problem that really has one control variable. Okay, so we can think of the original problem now decomposed into two hierarchical problems. The first one has to be searching for the optimal awake probability, and the second, the one that we've solved actually, is searching for the optimal forwarding set and the probability assignment. So now, to find the rates in order to maximize the overall problem, one can actually employ a simple binary search type of an algorithm, okay, which is that the sink assigns the target lifetime values for all the nodes to be the same, some value t. Each node finds the probability pi that satisfies its own target lifetime by simply doing this computation locally. Then for the given awake probability p, find the optimal forwarding set using your delay optimal. If it turns out that the delay is smaller than the maximum allowable delay, increase the target lifetime. If the delay is greater, well, decrease it until you come close enough, and you stop searching. So here is sort of a graphical animation of the binary search algorithm. You start with a certain target lifetime, find in fact the delay is too high, reduce it, and then maybe increase it to try to find that, to try to find this point. Okay. So what is the intuition behind choosing the same lifetime? Let's kind of give that, all right? So I think the intuition actually comes from the fact that overall problem has this maximin flavor, right? It's maximizing the lifetime of the node, which has the minimum lifetime, right? And therefore, if a feasible solution is to have everybody the same, well, it would in fact go to that. But let's look at this problem again, okay? And let's say that these lifetimes, in fact, are feasible, okay? That is, these lifetimes and these probabilities are in fact feasible. And T1 is the node that has the minimum lifetime among, say, nodes 1 through 5. Okay. Then let's see what would happen if we were to make all of the lifetimes the same, that is equal to the minimum lifetime. What would happen in this case is, look, you will increase your probabilities or your awake rates of all of the other nodes, which means that you will decrease their delays, so they will definitely be within the delay constraint. And this will also be a feasible solution, okay? Without any loss of optimality. So that's why what we are doing is we are targeting this particular solution. All right, so now for some simulation results. We have 400 sensor nodes uniformly deployed in a 10 by 10 area. And the sink, I believe, is located here. And any two nodes within a distance 1.5 are neighboring nodes to each other. And we compare the algorithm, the optimal algorithm, to three existing algorithms. The first one is called the normalized latency Anycast algorithm, okay, which is a heuristic algorithm that exploits geographic information, and its objective is to minimize this one hop delay divided by one hop progress, just locally does it. Okay? And then there is a naive algorithm, which I talked about earlier, which basically includes all nodes in its forwarding set that are closer geographically to the sink than itself. And finally, we compare it to the routing algorithm, where each node routes the packets to its designated forwarding node using some kind of Bellman-Ford type of algorithm. So here are the simulation results. What you can see is that all of the Anycast algorithms actually outperform the routing algorithm significantly. Okay, so the network lifetime that they achieve for a delay constraint is quite a bit better. And what we also notice is that when these nodes are deployed uniformly, in fact, the performance of this Anycast norm, algorithms, pretty close to the optimal algorithm. So seems like the heuristic algorithms are also doing pretty well. Okay. So now we look to a deployment which is non-uniform, because in reality one could envision that sensor nodes are not uniformly distributed because of various reasons, placement issues, you could terrain issues, and so have a lake in between, for example. And for this case, what you find is that indeed the optimal algorithm works much better than the heuristic Anycast algorithms, because what the optimal algorithm does is it sends nodes to nodes that are farther from the sink in order to sort of detour this hole. Okay. So this, it sort of does it naturally. Okay. So here's a very kind of quick summary of what we've talked about so far. I think, I think everything is pretty self-evident. We've developed a joint control problem of how to choose these forwarding sets, priorities, awake probability, the optimal Anycast algorithm minimizes the end-to-end delay, maximizes the network lifetime, and is not very complex. So now let's talk about some open issues. First, the definition of network lifetime. Okay, so it's the definition is that it's maximizing the lifetime of the nodes, the node that dies first, right? And that definition would be okay if for some reason strict coverage is very important. That is, events that you are actually detecting in every case are very, very important, or you are able to put in redundant nodes. That is, you know, basically areas which you would expect more traffic to go to, or areas that nodes need to be awake longer, you know, you kind of put in more redundant nodes. However, the lifetime definition is still quite restrictive, and in fact, that was probably brought to the fore by this example. Let's go back a little. Okay, remember that here we had these sets of lifetimes if they were that were feasible, okay? That, look, if I end up decreasing the lifetimes of these other nodes, okay, I'm still feasible. I'm still optimal, right, as far as this problem is concerned. What this tells me is that, look, I'm decreasing the lifetime of these other nodes and still being optimal, but maybe that's not what I want to do. Maybe I want to, keep, rather than have maximize the lifetime of the minimum nodes, maybe I want to maximize the lifetime of the node that ensures, you know, the kth connectivity or something like that. Right? I mean, so this is clearly a problem that needs to be investigated further. Okay. Uh-oh. There's a delay which is messing me up. Okay. The other question is, what happens in applications where you have non-negligible transmission energy? So you still have relatively infrequent sleep-wake cycles, but you have the transmission energy now is not completely negligible. Okay, that is, you know, the duty cycle is, instead of being, you know, 0.01, maybe it's 0.1 or something like that, or, you know, 0.05. Right. So the way to think about this is as follows. Okay, regardless of what the duty cycle is, okay, you can think of this sleep-wake scheduling problem to have three components. Okay. Component one is the initialization component. Okay, this is the component where the sync node figures out which neighbors are present, you know, makes these sort of connectivity issues, and then, in fact, determines, okay, what these sleep-awake probabilities should be such that you want to ensure that your delay constraints are satisfied. That's the contribution that we have made. However, that contribution is related to component two, which is essentially in the actual operation of these sleep-wake of the sleep-wake schedules. Okay, that is, these nodes wake up and sleep and so on, and when an event is detected, you want them to wake up sufficiently quickly such that the delay is not excessive. Then there's a third part, which is that when an event occurs, or when a set of events occurs, now transmissions take place. Okay? In that case, if these transmissions take place sufficiently frequently, then what you want to do is you want to disturb the sleep-wake process a little bit. Because what you may want to do is you may want these nodes to remain awake for a little bit longer so that the delay to the destination is reduced. And that's something that needs to be addressed. And of course, in sensor networks, typically people don't talk about contention, but it could happen. And even with rare events, you could have things like flash floods, and that needs to be addressed. And the final question is that, our general sleep-wake pattern, what about, we assume Poisson sleep-wake patterns, are they actually optimal? And the answer is, of course, no. It turns out that asynchronous deterministic sleep-wake patterns, in fact, are the best. Okay, how many minutes do I have? Actually, I started at 1:45, so technically I have 7 minutes, right? Which is why I'm going on. But if you want me to stop, I can stop. This is not a bad place to stop. So it was a rhetorical question. I just wanted the answer that I was looking for, basically. Anyway, I'll stop here. Oh, this one you mean? This one, the general sleep wake pattern. So basically, the criteria is that for a given energy budget, you want to minimize the delay.
Well, what is that distribution?
Sorry?
So
how do you choose the sleep wake patterns? So right now we've chosen the sleep wake rates, given that they correspond to a stochastic process, which is a Poisson process, right? But now you also want to do, you may want to use another stochastic process. Okay, it turns out that if you basically each individual node deterministically sleeps and wakes up, even if it's completely asynchronous, okay, it turns out that will maximize.
You formulate the thing in terms of duty cycles rather than rates.
I'm not formulating it in terms of rates. I'm formulating it in terms of the actual patterns, right? It's not in the terms of rates. Yeah.
I would like to ask two questions.
Sure.
You have the wake up pattern, you have around the lambda, you're thinking about the probability P, but
right.
The probability has the duration also in it, which is less globally constant.
The T sub I. Right.
Now, if you vary, does that...
Yeah, so in this particular thing, we basically say that, look, if a node, has to remain awake for a certain small amount of period of time, otherwise it'll miss the beacon signal.
Yeah,
so
I think overall, if you played with that duration...
Yeah, so... It is possible. In fact, what we are saying is the following: is that when a node wakes up, it consumes a certain amount of energy, U sub I, which is essentially fixed, and that could be a function of this duration, It could be a function that it's really the duration is so short that it doesn't matter. But it's actually if you look at practical sensor networks, just turning that radio on, takes a lot of energy. So that duration, if it's sufficiently small, doesn't add significantly to the energy consumption.
The second question that I wanted to ask was, what you're doing is you're somewhat counterintuitive that you are optimizing over in a vision where you consider all possible paths or multiple paths, but in the end you're running a shortest path. But if you knew that, wouldn't
it just not? I mean, you're not really. It just has a flavor of the shortest, but it's not real.
If you take something off
right.
Behavior,
right.
Wouldn't you pick? Why do you start out under an essentially a routing scheme that considers all routes?
Because your forwarding set could be anything, right? You don't know a priori what your forwarding sets are, right?
Well,
that's the point.
That
so once you know the forwarding, sorry.
In the end, you will have single.
No, you don't have one node. You have a forwarding set. Each node has actually a forwarding set, right? That's the point, right? So in fact, the routing paths will not be fixed, right? Even when you have a message to transmit, because it depends on which of those nodes in the forwarding set wakes up first. right? So it's not quite the same. Yeah, John. I'm not making that argument. I mean, that's a religious argument, right? And sorry. I mean, the simple answer is that if everything is synchronous and you ignore the energy consumed due to the synchronization messages being transmitted back and forth, then that will in fact be the lower bound. It will be the best you can do. Sorry? Right. Mm-hmm. You may, but if the duty cycle is small, then your clock will again get drifted, right? So in a sense, you know, yeah. So it's certainly something you can do, but you know, it depends on the duty cycle. Yeah. I guess. Go ahead. Yeah. Sure. I must admit that I'm not an expert theory. I mean, there are works that have actually, so there are several, how shall I say, heuristic algorithms that people have suggested and have estimated the cost of synchronization, the actual synchronization. And I think people have, in the ACM literature, you will find, you know, one's synchronized sleep-wake set scheduling is better than another's because it reduces the cost. As far as the actual, so I will just say one thing to kind of answer Jean's kind of question, and that is here we actually show that if you use the best asynchronous sleep-wake solution, okay, then compared to the perfect synchronous solution without the cost of energy exchange, the lifetime difference is not as dramatic. So there is sort of not quite a mathematical answer, but at least somewhat of an answer to your question. Yeah, there was another question. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so in that case, but then how do you choose? I mean, between these various paths. I mean, how do you make this choice as to which of those paths to choose? I don't quite follow. If somebody understands the question better than me, feel free to rephrase it because I don't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can do it offline. Yeah. Yeah.
If you have more than one, you can still use the
rate. Yeah. So the short answer to that is that's something which is ongoing. It's not been. So the solution that we are giving will not be strictly optimal. I don't believe in that case. But the workaround should not be too hard. Okay. All right.
I promise you got your phone.
Oh, I did. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Nick.
Sure, thank you.
The next talk is by Armand Makovsky, and I think we have to switch laptops. But